Donald Trump is a walking, talking Streisand effect.
He's a... Yes, he is. He's the dumbest mother... In, oh, God, he's so dumb. Dangerous, but dumb.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to George Conway Explains It All to Sarah. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and because I'm not a lawyer, I've asked my good friend George Conway to explain the illegal news to me. And there's always so much to discuss. So, George, let's get
becoming
right
more
into
illegal
it.
Ever, with every day.
That is not a joke.
No,
a true
we are
thing.
Serious. We are, you know, I mean, that's the one thing that's being brought into this country without. I mean, exports are down, but illegality is up.
Illegality
imports,
you know,
are down, exports down. Yeah.
Every time I put together a guide, my producer works on it. She's a lawyer. She knows all the issues. And then I immediately think of something that's not on here that you and I haven't talked about. Do you follow the Trump crypto scam stuff?
Yeah, like I saw that New York Times is excellent.
$2 billion?
Yeah, no, I mean, it is difficult for me to imagine that there isn't some legal issue presented by that, one or more. It's going to be hard for me to believe that somebody isn't going to lose their shirt at some point. And that if anybody else on the entire planet were doing this, it would result in someday a very large investigation and massive lawsuits, and may yet. And I will say this, I mean, I don't know that there's any criminality involved, but if there is, it's not covered by the Supreme Court's immunity decision from last year, because this is in no way is this within the outer perimeter of the president's official responsibilities, which is the ultimate test in that regard. So I conclude that if there's anybody on the planet who could find a way around the extensive protections that the Supreme Court of the United States gave to presidents of the United States last year in the case of Trump versus the United States, it is Donald J. Trump. I have faith in him, his ability to somehow manage to put himself in a position where someday he might be prosecutable. He could do it. I have faith.
I'm glad you have faith in him. Here's the thing, just on the crypto thing that blows my mind is nobody is talking about it at all. This is one of those things where, you know, we're all talking about deportations, we're talking about the economy, but do you think we're just so in like a nerd to Donald Trump's corruption? Because the foreign corruption, like the new crypto scam, is that, you know, these foreign entities can put billions into this, you know, Trump coin. And then there was already one where he's, you know, as far as I can tell, defrauding people. And I think some of it has to do with the fact that crypto is hard for people to get their heads around. They don't really understand
what is it. How do you trace it? How do you document it?
Trump's always been a salesman, so sort of people can't get their arms around it. It's different from him just sort of making all the people attending the G8 stay at one of his stupid hotels.
In the New York Times piece, there was this whole thing about how there were some, you know, crypto mavens in the Caymans who looked at this and thought it was so sleazy they wouldn't touch it or something like that. And, you know, again, these things have, you know, scams have a way of falling apart. And sometimes they take a while to do that, and sometimes it takes a while to sort of unpack them. And if enough people are hurt by these things, assuming that this is scammy, we may be hearing about this for years.
Yeah, but there's the scam part, and then there's sort of the this is a way to funnel money into Trump's pockets part by foreign entities and people who may want favors from him.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember how during the first Trump administration, there was a big deal about how people were renting ballrooms at the Trump Hotel, which is now the Waldorf Astoria down on Pennsylvania Avenue.
Which is great, by the way, now.
It's
Waldorf
great.
Astoria.
It's lovely. It's lovely.
I got a great Jose Andreas joint in there that's nice.
Yeah. That's bupkis compared to this stuff.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
It feels like we're not talking enough about the bigness, the scope of the monetization of the presidency.
I think we will be talking about this, even if there isn't established criminality at this point or established illegality. I think one of the things that's got to happen is, look, we The Commerce Department this week announced that economic activity declined. The economy contracted during the first quarter of 2025, the American economy. If it contracts a second quarter in a row, which it likely will because of these tariffs, which have not yet fully kicked in, then what we'll see at the end of the second quarter is that the economists will declare that as of the first quarter of 2025, now, or actually prior to now, we're in a recession. And this is going to be a potentially deep recession. It's going to be hard for the government to turn this around because right now you're seeing that we've been reading about container ships from Asia not coming to the United States. It's just like nothing is coming in. There are going to be shortages. There are going to be all sorts of bad things are going to happen over the next few weeks. We're going to end up in a recession, and people are going to be very unhappy. I mean, you're going to see within a matter of weeks, I'm sure, that all of a sudden there's going to be something that people won't be able to get in the stores of their choice. I don't know whether it's going to be toilet paper like it was in 2020. It could be something else. It could be toys in a store. I don't know. And people are going to start to sort of like try to buy them. And then there are going to be real shortages just because people are going to sort of freak out and say, we need to hoard stuff. And we're, you know, this is all going to be laid upon him. He's trying already to blame it on Biden and say, what's the Biden economy, even though last year he was claiming that the economic boom in the stock market 2024 when he wasn't president was due to him, the anticipation of him becoming president. You know, he's going to get blamed for all this. And the flip side is going to be, a la the kinds of things that Navalny and his people were putting out in Russia in past years before Putin killed him, is the story of the contrast between the graft, the corruption, the self-indulging attempts to and self-enrich of the people in government and their cronies versus what's happening to Americans in the grocery stores, in their workplaces, and in their checking accounts. And that's not going to go well for this administration.
Yeah. Okay. I will just say, as a funny side note, yeah, this was like wasn't even on our topics, but as a funny side note, he did that Biden economy thing. And just today, the markets had a super big rally on the jobs report coming out. Yeah. And it was like the day after he said, no, this is Biden's economy. And now it's like we're having a good day.
Right.
Exactly. Love that for Trump. Okay. So on Thursday, a Trump-appointed federal judge in Texas barred the administration from invoking the Alien Enemies Act to deport Venezuelans. Now, we've covered some of this before, but as a refresher, the Alien Enemies Act dates back to 1798 and says that if there is a declared war with or invasion by a foreign nation, the president can make a public proclamation and remove citizens of the hostile nation. And since 1798, the Alien Enemies Act has only been invoked by presidents in connection with three wars, the War of 1812, World War I, and World War II. And now Donald Trump is doing it against the Venezuelan street gang, Tren de Aragua.
Aragua.
Who I'm sure are bad hombres.
Yeah, you don't
bad
want
dudes,
them around,
man.
I'm sure. Yeah.
But also,
I don't want Donald Trump around either.
Is this a war? Are we at war?
Yeah, that's the kind of a problem that they have, and that's basically where this judge came out. I mean, the Alien Enemies Act says that whenever there is a declared war, hold that thought, between the United States and any foreign nation or government, hold that thought, or any invasion or predatory incursion is perpetrated, attempted, or threatened against the territory of the United States by any foreign nation or government. So hold the thoughts on invasion or predatory incursion, and again, foreign nation or government. Then the President of the United States can issue a public proclamation declaring that aliens from that country can be removed from the United States. And what this judge ultimately found was he gave them the benefit of the doubt on whether or not the Venezuelan government was controlling or causing Tren de Aragua, I forget how you pronounce it, to do stuff. But he squarely said that based upon what the reading of the proclamation that Donald Trump issued, there was no declared war, right? Congress has not declared war. That's a no-brainer.
Congress hasn't done anything.
And then he goes into what the basic, simple understanding of invasion or predatory incursion is. And he looks at the dictionaries and he looks at what Congress had to say about it in the 18th century. And he says, ain't here. And it's pretty simple. I mean, an invasion is when you have armed forces crossing over a border to hold territory of the United States. Now, a predatory incursion, that's a little bit more obscure, but it isn't that hard to figure out. It's basically a raid. A bunch of guys sneak over the border together, military, armed, kind of like guerrillas, G-U-E, or guerrillas, you know, guerrillas as in guerrilla fighters, not guerrilla apes.
Great distinction.
Great distinction. Important distinction. Important distinction. Many people are saying.
Appreciate you acting it out.
Right. Not but boom, boom, boom. And they go over the border and, like, you know, they blow something up or they shoot at somebody or they set fire to something or they, you know, they come back and then they sneak back over. That's a predatory incursion. A raid. Neither of those are reflected in what the description of TDA, Tren de Aregua, that's in the proclamation. And it doesn't make sense. I mean, if there was an actual invasion by a bunch of Venezuelans, we'd heard about that. But what you have is you have this members of a gang giving the president his due, the most you can give him in being just sort of giving him the benefit of the doubt, the most you can say that he's concerned with is that a bunch of Venezuelans have flown and come into the United States legally or illegally and done bad stuff in cahoots with one another in various different places. That's just criminal conduct, general criminal crime. It's not a military invasion. It's not a predatory incursion. It's nothing of the sort that the Congress in 1798 was concerned about. And so the judge basically said, sorry. You can't use the Alien Enemies Act to detain these people and toss them out of the country. And the other thing that he did at the same time, actually just before he issued this order, is that he certified a class action, meaning that not only did the three people who brought this official lawsuit get the benefit of this ruling, but everybody like them, all the other Venezuelans who are being held in the district where this judge sits, the Southern District of Texas, which includes Houston and Brownsville and some other parts in southeastern Texas. So it's a pretty devastating ruling against the government's program here. And I think what's going to happen is there are a number of other districts in which similar lawsuits were brought. I think we've discussed in the past that there was a lawsuit brought in the District of Columbia that the Supreme Court, you know, issued an order saying, yeah, you have to give these people notice, but at the same time, they have to bring habeas cases in individual districts and you can't bring a nationwide thing. But there are a number of cases just like this one in the Southern District of Texas that are in, I think there's one in New Jersey. I think there's one in the District of Columbia that deals with people who are already been shipped abroad. There are a couple of others in other districts that, you know, the same issues are presented, and I think the government's going to lose every single one of them. But ultimately, it's going to have to go up to the Supreme Court.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. That's the next step, right? It goes up to the Supreme Court. And so, I guess what happens in the meantime? They just can't deport anybody?
Well, in the meantime, all of these people who are being held by ICE or the U.S. government generally in that district, that federal district, that part of Texas, cannot be thrown out of the country. They have to be maintained where they are, in the counties in which they are currently, according to the terms of the order, in the counties in which they are currently being held.
Okay, so I have a kind of a slightly in the weeds question,
right,
about the unified executive theory when it goes up to the Supreme Court. Because one of the things the government has argued is that the president's invocation of the Alien Enemies Act is a political question over which the judiciary has no authority. But this judge in this case said allowing the president to unilaterally define the conditions when he may invoke the AEA, the Alien Enemies Act, and then summarily declare that those conditions exist would remove all limitations to the executive branch's authority under the AEA and would strip the courts of their traditional role of interpreting congressional statutes to determine whether a government official has exceeded the statute's scope. The law does not support such a position. So does the government's argument resonate with the conservatives on the Supreme Court who have sort of an expansive view of executive power?
Yeah, no, because I don't think it's ever – the political question doctrine is kind of a difficult thing to pin down, but it's never been that broadly interpreted. It's a way for the court to get out of thorny situations. But really what – the way it works is and the way it was applied in this case is – that when Congress gives the president discretion to do something, you can't second guess that discretion if you're a judge and say, well, that wasn't such a good idea. I mean, the president thought this was more important than this, and I don't agree. Can't do that. But what the court said here and what the law allows courts to do, even under the political question doctrine, is if there are predicates – legal predicates that must be met before that discretion comes into play, such as there's got to be a declared war or an invasion of the U.S. territory or a predatory incursion, right? Those things have to have by a foreign nation or government. Those things have to be found. Those things have to exist before you get to the point where the president can exercise his unfettered discretion to say, okay, these people 14 and over have to be thrown out of the United States, or we're going to review each one of them and make a determination as to which ones are dangerous. You know, that's when his discretion comes in. How he exercised that discretion, if there's an invasion, if there's a declared war, if there's a predatory incursion by a foreign government or nation, you know, how he exercises that is not the province of the courts to review, but it is the province of the courts to review whether or not those predicates exist, and that's exactly what the district court held here, and that's consistent with the law governing the question of political questions.
Okay, that was a good – that was a very good explanation.
Thank you.
It must be that espresso martini that Carson made.
Espresso martini. I know. It's just like I come –
it's
just
it's making us sharp and clear.
No, I just
had
a cold, and this is the thing. I just absolutely – that's why we're in separate rooms. I don't want to infect you.
I know. I appreciate that. I got a speech
Tuesday. You can hear the raspiness in my voice, but the espresso martini probably will keep me up all night, but
I know. I usually
of course,
don't drink
I slept
them this
all day
late.
Yesterday because of my cold. That's the only way I get rid of colds. And so, anyway, probably
okay.
Be up a lot anyway.
Is there any other litigation on this front you want to cover that you're following? And you're like, oh, I, you know, this has moved. Or
no, I mean, I think that this was inevitable. Sooner or later, the courts were going to get to this issue, which is the fundamental problem. And I think the government was hoping to avoid this issue because, on its face, the proclamation was ridiculous because, we're not at war with Venezuela, and these people did not invade us in any way, shape, or form. You may not like them. They may be criminals. They may be engaging in criminal conspiracies left and right. I don't know. And you may have the right to deport them under the Immigration and Naturalization Act. But under this particular law, this 1798 law, which deals with actual wars and stuff like wars and invasions and incursions and military action, that doesn't apply here. It's all bullshit.
George, you raised something actually. This is like what I don't understand about this administration is I don't actually have a lot of pushback for you on deporting gang members from other countries. You get Venezuelan gang
members.
Neither
does the American public.
No, like – great. Let's establish that they are gang members and have committed crimes and kick them out. That's
absolutely
cool. No problem. Are they here
no
illegally?
Get
rid of them.
Nobody disagrees with that.
Nobody disagrees with that. Why do they need to do this overreach? Why do they have to use the Alien Enemies Act instead of just using normal rules that let them deport people?
Because A, they're morons, and B, they act in bad faith, and C, they're just performative. Okay. they haven't been able to, I think they haven't been able to basically match prior administrations, including the Biden administration's levels of expulsions. And I think they've been frustrated at that. I think partly the reason why they haven't been able to do that is because people stopped coming, you know, because they've been expelled. I don't know.
And because Biden did close the border finally toward the end of his term.
And we could have enhanced with the border security bill, the bipartisan border security bill that
Trump refused to.
So I think they're desperate for putting on a show, and that's what they've been doing, and they're trying to make the show dramatic. They took videos of these people, and they had videos in El Salvador of the people being abused, basically, and they think that's really good. But the problem is, you know, you can speak better to this than I, since you are the political consultant. They're upside down on this issue now. This is their two strongest issues, right, were the economy and immigration. And they're basically flipping themselves on it. They're losing on these issues because they're doing crazy shit.
This is the thing. I mean, they had a winning issue here. Because, like I said, nobody was going to deny them. Like, this, the whole fight we're having about Abrego Garcia, and Trump's, like, talking about the photo. Donald Trump is really... He's like, this guy's brain is mashed potatoes. He is like, they did a Photoshop of MS-13 where they were like decoding the guy's tattoos. And Donald Trump thinks he has MS-13 tattooed on his knuckles. Well, actually,
it looks like it's something just a Photoshop. I would put on, like, you know, it looks like something I create on my iPad.
Which is like Arial font.
Arial font on his
knuckles.
It's a perfectly Arial font that doesn't even follow the shape of the guy's knuckles, right?
No.
I mean, you think the S would kind of be kind of a little contorted as he moves his knuckle. No, it's a perfectly dropped S on the, you know, I mean, come on.
No, we got Uncle Crazy Pants here, who is, getting to, and it's so funny. He was doing an interview. And the guy, the interviewer, was like, yeah, those are Photoshopped. But he was trying to move on. Trump just kept insisting.
Yeah, Trump can't let go.
He was like, he can't let it go. Right. No, this is real. This guy's MS-13. But anyway.
Yeah.
Why did I start going into Abrego Garcia? This isn't a question of whether these are good people. Like, the way Donald Trump has had, like, he really did have a mandate on immigration. And voters were really with him on, if people are criminals, send them away.
No problem.
But of course, they have, across the board, they've made mistakes and admitted mistakes. They've refused to bring people back. They failed to prove that they are what they say they are when they are gang members. And so, like, now he's upside down. And then they're defying the Supreme Court and playing stupid games.
Right.
And so this is getting away from them as an issue.
Right.
Not because people are like, well, Abrego Garcia is probably like a model citizen. They're saying the guy deserves due process. If you want to deport him, deport him. But don't send him to a gulag where he can never have redress for the rest of his life. And Americans do... I think Trump thinks Americans don't understand this. And if he just keeps saying MS-13 over and over again, that people won't understand. And look, a lot of people won't. I've done focus groups and listened to a lot of people say, well, I heard he's a gang member, so I don't care if he was deported.
Right, but that's 20 or 30%. You're losing the people in the middle who you needed, you know, in an election, after an election that you won only by like a percent and a half.
Yeah, that's right. So enough people still do believe in due process that they now have a problem, and they're turning a strength into
a weakness. They believe in law and order, but they also, you know, they believe in law and order. The order part is important.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not just, you know, they believe in law and order. So this has to be done orderly and according to law. Right. That's part of it. If you just willy nilly throw people out of the country, that's not law and order. I wish we had that thing, the bum bum law and order. Bum 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 bum
bum.
People get due process. They watch TV. They watch.
Yeah, people do get it.
Dun, dun, dun,
this is still America, guys. We are not Russia yet. America. Okay, George. So this is the other issue that happened this week that I'm pretty curious of your take on, because last week, FBI agents arrested a sitting judge in Milwaukee. Her name is Judge Hannah Dugan. For obstructing justice. Now, what we know is that ICE agents arrived outside her courtroom to arrest a Mexican national who was there on battery charges. It's worth noting that until this administration changed the policy, Certain locations like courthouses, schools, hospitals, and churches were protected from ICE enforcement because societally we have an interest in undocumented people showing up for court hearings and going to school or the hospital. But this administration changed the policy to afford ICE agents more discretion at these sensitive locations.
Right.
Okay. So ICE shows up at the courthouse and Judge Dugan tells them they need a warrant and to talk with the chief judge. Judge Dugan then let the man in question leave through the side door, although he was ultimately arrested. A week later, Judge Dugan was arrested at her courthouse by the FBI and charged with obstructing immigration officers and concealing someone to prevent arrest. Now, whether or not the FBI was correct in its charging, it's incredibly unusual for a federal or it's incredibly unusual for federal law enforcement to arrest a sitting judge like that. So here's my question. Are people, because I saw the headlines from this and I was like, oh my gosh, they're arresting judges. But when I heard then the full story, I was like, I don't know. Are people blowing this out of proportion? If she really did break the law? Or do you think this is intended to chill conduct? Like, what was your read on this?
I think it's intended to intimidate judges. And if you go through the facts, the facts as written up in the FBI agent's complaint are very, very stilted and one-sided. But according to other reports, including there was a lawyer who is chair of the Wisconsin Election Commission, I think she is, and she basically described the layout of this area, which is very, very important. And what happened here was, there were six agents from ICE and FBI, six federal agents in the hallway. They were ready to arrest this guy after his hearing before Judge Dugan. And they told the courtroom deputy beforehand that that's what they were there for. And they agreed to stay out in the hallway. And they were told they had to talk to the chief judge because they wanted to have some kind of, they don't want a commotion in the courthouse, right? You don't want a commotion. You don't want a scene. You don't want all that stuff. And as you noted, after the hearing, they were still out in the hall, and the judge told the lawyer and the defendant, the guy that the ICE was trying to arrest, to go out the jury door. Okay, so the way courtrooms are generally set up in many, if not most, courthouses, is there are multiple entrances to the courtroom. One is the main entrance that you walk in, and then there are the galleries on the right, and there's the chairs on the right and left, and then you go in front of the bar and you enter the court. That's the main entrance. But there's usually one behind the bench where the judge comes in from her robing room or from the judge's elevator in some courthouses where they, where the judges have this way of getting up and down the building without meeting the public so that they don't get harassed or anything like that. And there's also a door that maybe the court officers use so they can go out and, not go through the front door. And then there's one for the jury often. And the reason why there's one for the jury is that so the jury can come in and come out without running into any of the parties or the lawyers. And in this particular case, the door that the judge told the lawyer and the defendant to go out was the door to the jury room. And then that room has another door that goes out to the same hallway that the main courtroom door goes into. So basically, the charge that she was obstructing an arrest, and let's leave apart the fact that this was not actually a judicial warrant. There's a whole issue about the fact it was an administrative warrant issued by an non-Article III judge. But let's set that aside. They came out in the same hallway where all the agents were, okay, just a few feet away. And not only that, one of the agents saw them and then went into the elevator with them and followed them down to the courthouse exit, and then they arrested him outside, okay? And the affidavit kind of dances around this and says, oh, it kind of makes it look suspicious that they didn't use the elevator closest to the jury door, I was like, because there apparently there were two elevators, two sets of elevators. One goes to the parking garage where they didn't want to go. One goes to the lobby where you go out the main entrance. They went to the one that they needed to use. And basically, so what happened was, here's the most that this judge did. The most that this judge did is she sent the guy out to the hallway through another direction where the agents immediately saw him. That's not obstruction. That's not hiding someone. There's no, you know, if she had basically found some back staircase where they could go out a back entrance to the courthouse, that would be different. That might, maybe they would have a case there. But, this guy went into the main hallway where all the agents were. And there was no doubt that that's where he was going to end up. Most you can infer from what this judge did was that she didn't want to scuffle in front of the door, the entrance to her courtroom. Okay, she just wanted to move it down the hall. That's not a crime. And the notion that they're suggesting it's a crime and that they stage an arrest at her courthouse instead of just issuing a criminal complaint and having her calling her in, I mean, it's just absurd. It really is. This case is not going to see. It's not going to last. I mean, this case is going to get thrown out at some point by a federal judge. It's a joke, and it's. And not only that, I mean, the government is committing violations, ethical violations of egregious ethical violations. I mean, because the director of the FBI issued a tweet about this, really kind of an obnoxious tweet, and under the principles of federal prosecution that are part of the DOJ manual, you are not allowed to make not public statements other than the indictment says this, the charge says this, and you can state the charges in the terms in which they are made. Okay, you don't get to say things like what Pam Bondi, the Attorney General of the United States, said on Fox News, saying this is a criminal judge in a criminal court, okay, committing crimes. You don't get to say that. That's a violation of prosecutorial ethics. This is just grandstanding. It's performative, like I was saying about what they're doing with the immigration laws generally. It's outrageous. And this case is just, I mean, unless there's something more to it, it is flimsy as all hell.
Hey, what do you make of Paul Clement on her legal team?
Well, I think that says a lot. I have to.
Can you explain who Paul Clement is?
Paul Clement was one of the two guys who served as Solicitor General of the United States under the George W. Bush administration. The first was Ted Olson, who recently passed away, a wonderful lawyer. And Paul Clement was his successor and really is probably the most respected Supreme Court advocate of this my generation, his generation. You know, people, he's probably in his 50s. He's probably the most respected Supreme Court advocate of the last 25 years. And he's argued countless cases in front of the Supreme Court. And he's a rock-solid conservative. Member of the Federalist Society, a Scalia clerk, I think he was. And he clearly has just had it with the Trump. I don't think he likes Donald Trump. I don't think he feels, I mean, just basically the things that he's gotten involved with kind of show that he doesn't buy all this stuff, and he's representing Judge Dugan. And she's got a great team. Apparently there's a former federal district judge in the Eastern District of Wisconsin from Milwaukee, who's representing her. I mean, she's got a great, great legal team. And she's going to beat these charges. It may take a while. But I think it's important that, I think that this case needs to have attention drawn to it because it really shows how abusive and how contemptuous of the rule of law this administration has become.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the Paul Clement thing and went, oh.
Yeah.
He must. This is a message sending type thing.
It's a message sending thing. Paul doesn't have to do this. Paul does not have to do this. And Paul has just this incredibly great practice. And he's always devoted a chunk of his practice to pro bono work that has, that has been in favor of causes that he supports, and mostly conservative causes. I mean, he had to leave a major Atlanta firm with a DC, and he was in the DC office of a major Atlanta firm because he was representing, I forget what party it was, in a case where he was taking a very conservative position. And you know, one of the companies that was a big client of that firm, I think it was Coca-Cola, objected to it, and well, he said, "Fine, if you don't want to, I'm going to go out on my own." He's done just he represented the challengers, people who are trying to vindicate their Second Amendment rights. He's represented on the side of the NRA. He's a conservative. And nobody can question his conservative credentials, but he believes in the rule of law, and he doesn't believe in basically this kind of attempt at punishing judges and intimidating state court judges.
Well, thanks for talking about the staircase. You laid that out because I was sort of like in my cartoon version of this, where I was like, a side door she opened so he could open up into the alleyway and evade the cops. But that's not right.
No, it was that there's one big hallway.
I see.
And
yeah,
there were six agents, and one of them actually did see, oh, there's the defendant, and follow them into the elevator. And the affidavit submitted by the government to support the arrest actually describes that this agent was overheard the conversation in Spanish between the defendant and his lawyer. It's like, what's the problem? There was no obstruction. You could have arrested him right there in the elevator. I mean, come on. It's asinine, just asinine.
Okay, that's interesting. Well, that was good. I'm glad at that. This show, it teaches me a lot, George, I got to tell you.
That's why you ask me.
That's why I ask you. That's right. Hey, everyone. Thanks for watching the show. If you want to catch the rest of this episode, then go become a Bulwark Plus subscriber. Catch the rest of the show and support all the great work we do here at the Bulwark. Thanks, guys.